Hello and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Kay, and we're joined by producer Chris Judge of the class of 2005. Here on the Providence College Podcast, we bring you interesting stories from the Friar family. This week, we're talking with Abby Mantalillo, a member of the class of 2021. Abby majored in English and in Women's and Gender Studies at Providence College and is now in her second year at Roger Williams University School of Law. Last year was a busy one for Abby because she was crowned Miss Rhode Island in May and she competed in the Miss America pageant in November. Abby, thanks so much for joining us and congratulations on your honor.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So thanks for indulging us in a little show and tell right from the start.
It's here.
Can you tell us about your crown?
I can.
How much does it weigh? Is it difficult to wear?
I don't know how much it weighs, but it's heavy. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with the banner, which we do wear more often than the crown. And then I do have a crown pin on it that was a gift from a former Miss Rhode Island, Allie Curtis. And so she gives that to the winner. So again, oftentimes if I'm not wearing the crown, the crown pin stays. And so this is the crown, there's a little mirror inside. And we have to keep it on a pillow because you don't want it to scratch. And this is it. It has, 4 points of the crown. So it's style, service, success, and scholarship, which we can talk about a little later if you'd like. And of course this is the big question. How does the crown stay on your head? And so, I'm not going to be able to fit it on here, but if it were, I would have to pin, between 6 and 8 pins in here. So it isn't too heavy, but by the time you get, a couple hours into your appearance, it gets a little heavy. But the night I won, I hadn't had the box yet. And I had been competing in pageants for so long, and I actually slept with it next to my bed. So that way I would know that I didn't actually dream that I'd won Miss Rhode Island. And so I love it. It's pretty. I'm just going to look at it sometimes.
The first thing you see as soon as you opened your eyes that morning.
It was the crown. The crown. Yes.
Yes.
It was a good feeling.
Dream come true.
It really was. I have been competing since I was 14 years old. So I'd wanted to represent Rhode Island on a national level, a national pageant for many years. And so, to finally have this happen for me was really validating. And it was a really wonderful experience. And this year has been the best.
So what inspired you to get started back when you were 14 years old?
So I had started modeling when I was younger, and then someone within that industry recommended that I give pageants a try. I did, and I caught the bug, and at 23, here I am. And it's been really crazy because, again, sometimes you don't always win. I hadn't won Miss Rhode Island, and I was Miss Rhode Island High School America when I was still Moses Brown in high school. And that was great. Obviously, Miss America system has done a lot for me. And so to win Miss Rhode Island was humbling. It was a really beautiful moment. And it's been a true pleasure representing our state, going across the state to appearances and events. And obviously going to Miss America has been, like you said, it's been a dream come true.
This definitely sounds like being Miss Rhode Island itself is a full-time job.
It is.
How did you balance being a second-year law student and preparing for Miss America?
I don't know, but I did. I'm really lucky that I have a wonderful support system. My family's great. They come with me to appearances, and they also are the ones to say, hey, listen, you don't forget you have appearances this weekend. Make sure everything gets, in order. But again, after competing for so long, you kind of do get used to balancing your time. I had to master that pretty quickly before I won Miss Rhode Island. And especially before I went to Miss America. With that in mind, too, the administration at Roger Williams Law was really so accommodating. They were so helpful. I had to, move some of my exams and really make sure that everything was accounted for. So very, very carefully is how I prepared. And, my family knows that I have, three calendars going all at once. And, nothing happens until the work gets done, and the work will get done. But it's hard to say it's a sacrifice because it's not, because when you love something so much, it doesn't feel like it's work. So this, being Miss Rhode Island, going to events is almost like you're something else. You can't just be in law school. You need to have something else to be really fulfilled. And this has been fulfilling in so many ways.
Tell us about the Miss America pageant. What were some of the highlights for you?
Oh my gosh. So going to Miss America was so much fun. We actually started in New York. So I competed at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful space, and meeting all the girls was just so much fun. But we started in New York for a tour. And it was nice because that was a highlight, given that you had such a busy week ahead of you, knowing that it was rehearsals, knowing it was events, for us, and meetings, and really long days. But that was our time to be with each other, to spend some quality time with the other candidates and get to know each other. So we went to Summit One Vanderbilt, and that's when you're literally like stories up and you see all of New York. And I'm horribly afraid of heights, but it was so, so worth it. And it was gorgeous. We went to the 9/11 Memorial, which I had never been to. So that was really, it was meaningful. It meant something being there with them. When we were at Miss America, so that was the first part, the first highlight. When we were at Miss America, every day was a theme. So we had rehearsals every single day. So it was, you know, your alma mater. So obviously I wore Providence College gear. There was, I believe there was like a Christmas theme. So actually Miss America, the girl who won, her name is Grace. We call her our amazing Grace because we just adore her. She came in a full Grinch costume. And Miss Nevada was terrified of the Grinch, so she like stayed away from her the whole day. It was hilarious. But, you know, things like that was what was really memorable, and learning the opening number. And I have this one moment stuck in my head where we had to practice our evening wear walk on stage. We had to put your gown on. And my gown meant a lot to me because it was the one I actually won the state title with because I loved it so much. I had my eye on it since I was 16. I fell in love. And I had this moment of, okay, well, you know, Rhode Island, come on up. And you step on the Miss America stage for the first time. It was during rehearsal. You know, no one has makeup on. No one's made up. You have your gown on. And that was when you look out in the audience that's completely empty. And that was when it hits you. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm at Miss America. And I think the highlight of Miss America was when I realized that I was there. And I'd realized that 8-year-old me would never have believed that I would go. And I was there.
I think most people probably don't even realize that if they've watched the televised pageant, that this is like the culmination of so much preparation, but also like a whole week's worth of events.
Yes, absolutely. So again, we started in New York and then we went right into rehearsals. And then, of course, there were preliminary competitions. So before you even see the live stream this year, it was live streamed. Before you even see that, the whole show, there are 2 days of preliminary competition. So I had your interview, you had your talent, you were on stage for your social impact initiative, you were on stage for your on stage question. And that, again, that's just, you see this very, very small part. So to really have this moment, and I didn't win Miss America. I didn't even come close to winning Miss America. And that's okay because you still got there. And it was breathtaking. It really was just to be there with this incredible group of women.
Let's talk a little bit about the benefits of participating in a pageant like Miss America, because I think you kind of mentioned that, like you've gotten through all this preparation and that surely is going to help you down the
Absolutely.
Road.
So one thing that people maybe don't know about Miss America is that at its heart, it's a scholarship organization. And so you don't have to win Miss America. You don't even have to win your state title to receive scholarship. So I competed in Miss Rhode Island when I was at Providence College and I was third runner up and I received a scholarship to Providence College. And so that's great because, again, you don't have to win to have that benefit. Of course, when you win, that number does go up and it's more scholarship. And then, of course, you get to go be Miss Rhode Island or go be Miss America. But, again, it's the opportunity because Miss America knows that young women, we need that push sometimes. And we actually, Miss America, raised the age requirement, the age limit. So women up to age 28, I believe, are now able to compete for their state title and can compete at Miss America. And again, that's wonderful because not only are we looking at tuition, we're looking at student debt. And a lot of times that does plague young women. So having that opportunity is so special. Aside from that, though, you know, it's doing events like this, or it's talking in front of crowds, or it's just going and interacting with people on a day-to-day basis. Being Miss Rhode Island, competing in Miss Rhode Island helps because you're getting ready for that. As a future attorney, that's a skill that we have to know how to do. And, of course, that's very beneficial. And I've been working with a pageant coach, pageant prep, with Erica Cruz-Weller for many, many years. And she prepared me not only to be at Miss America, not only to be Miss Rhode Island, but really just to be comfortable speaking to people and knowing not, you know, how to answer a question, not how to walk on stage, but just how to have that confidence and know that you know how to do it. It's just getting that tool and really sharpening everything that you have.
Abby, you are the child of two Providence College graduates.
I am.
And your mother, Elena, even graduated, even received a graduate degree from PT.
She did.
Tell us what led you to follow in their footsteps.
This is a very funny story. So when I was in high school, I went to Moses Brown, as I mentioned. I did not want to go to Providence College. I thought, for some reason, I thought it was too close to home. But then I said, well, it's okay. I'll go. I want to go to Brown. I toured Brown. I said, you know what? I don't think this is the right school. You know. And I toured Providence College. It was, I don't remember. I think it was like a nice-ish day, but it was kind of icy. I slipped down Guzman Hill. Like skid. And I don't know who it was. I don't know which member of Friars Club it was, but you know, I got up and I brushed myself off and he was like, that was the most graceful fall I've ever seen. I looked at my parents, I'm like, well, now I have to go here because I've literally marked the campus. And that's how I knew, but you know, I felt like it was home. it was just, I liked being in Rhode Island. It's a small school. It was everything that I wanted. I didn't know that until I toured. So it does mean something that I'm here. I was here as a legacy student, and, you know, many, many of my family members have gone here. My grandfather was on the President's Council. So again, Providence College is home. And I pulled up here today and I said, oh my God, like, I miss it here so much. You know, it's a very special campus. It's a beautiful place. I was here for homecoming, actually, and as an appearance, but also just, you know, after the 5K, and it was so much fun, and it was horrible, it was raining, it was cold, and didn't matter. It's still Providence. It's still home.
So tell us how you picked your two majors, English and Women's and Gender Studies.
Yes, I have always loved reading, always. My mother would, when I was little, she would be like, all right, sit here and just, you know, read your book. And I would sit here for hours. And she'd be like, are you still reading? And I wouldn't take my nose out of a book. I went to Barnes & Noble yesterday just to walk around, just see what I could find. So I loved that. I also knew that I could do anything with an English major. And then I started taking, I think I declared an English major when I was maybe October of freshman year. And then I decided to be a Women and Gender Studies major as well. I believe it was sophomore year. I was with Abigail Brooks. I had a lot of classes with her. I really liked the content. It was important work that she was doing, that she was teaching us. And it definitely was a bit of a different approach that I could take to, again, whatever I chose to do. I'm in law school now, and it absolutely helps the critical thinking, the awareness of the world around me. But I wasn't supposed to be in law school, actually. That's a longer story. When I was at Providence College, I was interning at NBC 10. I thought I was going to be a news anchor. COVID sent us home. And it was around that time where I was like, you know what? Something isn't right. This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, again, that's a longer story. But having those two majors behind me, it has helped in so many ways. Critical thinking, writing, you know, analysis, and how do you approach something simple as approaching a document and starting to write on and understanding the world around you and how that relates to who we are and who what this campus means to different people. It means something. It does.
I'm curious how your background as a women's studies major, how you reflect on your pageant life and your pageant experience as a women's studies major.
That's a really interesting question, because I actually spoke to one of Abigail Brooks' classes before I went to Miss America about pageants, about Miss America, and, you know, the very complicated history that beauty pageants have. However, with that being said, Miss America has evolved in so many ways. Being a scholarship organization, we included a talent portion, so women have that ability to be creative on stage in any way that they so choose. Our interview is longer, and so we are able to talk to the judges, and it's really a conversation. They're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing them, and it's really getting to know each other and understanding how I am right for that job. The women's studies major was very special because I felt so supported all the time. And I bring a very interesting side of the story where people have a very specific idea of beauty pageants being all about what you present, how you present physical attributes. But there's so much more to it than that. And Miss America has been, you know, Miss America, Miss Rhode Island's been so supportive of, you know, going to law school, being in law school. And Miss America represents the whole woman. It really does. And it's a very modern woman and one who can really put herself in any situation and know that she belongs in a boardroom, in a courtroom, and even on stage. And that means that anyone can do that, not just me, not just, you know, Miss America herself.
So you did choose the courtroom as your destination.
I did.
And how did you choose that?
So my mother went to law school. I actually come from a family of attorneys, and I had always wanted to go to law school when I was younger, and then I think I got a little sidetracked. I wanted to try something different, and I loved working at NBC 10. It was a lot of fun. It was great. Then during COVID, I started having second thoughts, and there was always that little nagging voice that was like, no, you're not cut out to go to law school. You know, why would you do that? You have this in front of you. And then I think by the time I told that voice to stop talking, it wasn't too late, thank goodness. And it never is. You can go to law school really at any time. So I took I signed up for the LSAT, you know, the day after Christmas in 2020. I took it in February. I had my scores back the next month, and I knew where I was going by May. And I actually joke because it reminded me of the scene in Legally Blonde where the press is like, she woke up and decided to go to law school today. And that's kind of what people think. But it was something that had always been, you know, a dream of mine, a passion of mine, and I'm happy to be here. And there's not a single day that goes by where I don't know that I made the right choice. I know I'm supposed to be in law school, and I know what that ultimate destination is. And again, the great thing about a legal career, a law degree, is that you can do anything with it. I can go and be a professor of law. I can go and be in the courtroom. I can go into politics. There are so many avenues I can take, and that flexibility is something I'm looking for.
But you have a pretty unique ambition already. Tell us about that.
So my goal is to be the second female attorney general of the state of Rhode Island. I worked in the attorney general's office this past summer. I specialized in narcotics and violent crime, and it was a very interesting office to be in. I loved it. It was so wonderful. I focused also on forfeitures. So that was just, it was rewarding because I saw the work that that office does and being in the public sector and how much, you know, in a lot of ways, the attorney general's office is the backbone of our legal community in so many ways. And people don't always realize that. So I met Arlene Violet, who was the first female attorney general of the state of Rhode Island, and she was truly inspiring, and it just solidified my love for public service. It really did.
So now I'm curious whether it was your background as an English major or your inspiration to pursue the law that inspired your talent portion for the pageant.
It was actually both. When I did Miss Rhode Island in the past, I sang. And it's like riding a bike. It's a muscle I haven't really exercised in a long time. And I wanted to do something different that reflected who I was and where I was at this point in my life. So my talent portion for not only Miss Rhode Island, but also Miss America, was a dramatic performance from On the Basis of Sex about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I remember sitting down watching the movie, and my jaw was on the floor. It was just so, so moving, so beautiful. And I chose this one particular monologue where she's talking about, you know, 100 years ago, women were not allowed to be in the courtroom. This was not an avenue that was available to us. And now look how far we are. So it was really wonderful to bring that to life. And it again, when we think of a talent portion, so many women have been singing since they were little or dancing or cheerleading. And that's so special because we get to see this very small glimpse of the girls who are competing. And mine is different because it focuses on my career and celebrating the women who've come before me and paving the way, helping to pave the way, I hope, to those who come after me. So I think it was both. I think it was both majors because, again, being an English major, you know, reading, it was so special and writing was so special, but also being in this world where women's studies is really, really important. And I also acted for many years at Moses Brown. So it was nice to do that again because I hadn't done it in a long time.
When you look back at your time at Providence, what were some of the experiences that really stand out to you?
So I will never forget. This is a very specific memory, but it was Valentine's Day, which also happened to be Ash Wednesday, or at least it was like around Valentine's Day. But I remember Providence College was playing Villanova, and I am a huge Providence College basketball fan. Like, everything stops during game day. So I was a freshman. And so here's the student section. We're in all pink. We all had our ashes and we beat Villanova. It was the best moment. And there are many, many others, but this is just one I'm thinking about, especially, you know, Providence being in the tournament. That was just the coolest moment because, again, that being at the dunk, you know, the Amica Pavilion that's actually where you see a little bit of God sometimes with each other. And that was very special. I was also a part of the Student Alumni Association, which was so great. I really loved connecting with people who've graduated Providence College and people who are still here. Because, of course, we say it all the time, once a friar, you're always a friar. And bridging that gap, bringing those two groups together, it meant something. And so, again, that's why I wanted to go back to homecoming. That's why I wanted to come back here. And really pay tribute in a lot of ways to this campus that really did shape me to be who I am. So that was great. And I have this one very distinct memory of being in Professor Bridgham's English class. I think I was a freshman at this time. We were in Harkins. And it was so beautiful out. It was like it was in the fall. And, you know, Providence is special all the time, especially in the fall when it's still that newness of the school year. And there was a girl next to me who was also in the Student Alumni Association. And that's how we started chatting. And, again, it's just that it's forging those relationships in the classroom and out. And it was just, it was special. And I loved every single professor I had. They all had such an impact on me, not just the ones that I've mentioned. So it's home. When I say it's home, it really is home.
I mean, when I think about this, I realize that you also had another milestone when you were here at PC because you participated in the RCIA program here.
I did. Yeah. I did that. And thank you for reminding me because that was also up there too. I wasn't confirmed before I came to Providence College. And I think my family decided, and I decided that, you know what? Whenever it happens, it happens. And God's timing is not ours. And God knows I had to learn that in not winning for a long time. And when we ask him for something, you know, he says yes, no, or not yet, right? There's something else. And this happened to be my yes. As soon as I, it was my freshman year, as soon as I walked on campus, I called my parents. I was living in McVinney at the time. And I called my parents and I said, I want to get confirmed. And they're like, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to take confirmation classes. They're every Sunday with Father Dom and it's going to be really great. And I'm confirmed at the end of, you know, end of April, beginning of May. And like, we're going to do this. And they were like, okay. And every Sunday I would go to the class of the confirmation classes. And then we'd all go to church together at 10:30 Mass. And that was really special because sometimes when people make their confirmation, it doesn't really mean anything. You're in high school, you go because you have to go, and you know, your parents say you have to go be an adult in the Catholic Church. But for me, getting confirmed on this campus, that just developed this relationship I have, not only with my faith, but with Providence College, you know, with Father Dom. My sponsor, Erica, she is, we call her like my godmother because she just, you know, I call her and she talks me off a ledge in seconds. And so again, those relationships that I've forged are, I hate to use the word special again because I've used it so many times, but they're meaningful. And that was, it was the best. I remember that day. It was beautiful. I think it was like Earth Day too. I think I had an event for the, I don't even know, maybe the Student Alumni Association. I was also on the Residence Hall Association when I was a freshman, so it might have been that too. But I remember being at an event that day. It was a beautiful day. I'll never forget it. It was awesome.
But it was definitely a conscious choice for you.
It was. Oh, it was. I felt like something was missing. I couldn't figure out what was missing. And then as soon as I walked in, it was like the basement of the church. And as soon as I sat down, I was like, ah. That's it. That's what was missing. And, you know, getting ashes here was special. And I think that's what makes Providence College unique, where you can say, oh, you know, I go to a Catholic school. I go to a college that has deeply rooted values in faith. But it's totally another to really feel that. And to have this environment where students feel like they can go and talk to the priests on campus. They can go and talk to the many nuns who are just, oh my gosh, Sister Anne Frances is one of my favorite people in the whole world. I still see her every once in a while if I'm ever here. She's the coolest. I love them.
This is a great segue to talk about Women's History Month. Sure. And I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit about some of the influential women in your life.
I gotta ask you how much time we have because there's a lot. So first of all, you know, everyone says their mom, but I'm gonna say my mom. Just to start, because she was so influential in so many ways. Again, her going to law school, I think she was one who was like, listen, I knew you'd end up going. I just couldn't tell you you're going to end up going because I had to figure it out for myself. And I did. She was also the reason why I created my social impact initiative, Trust Your Gut, which is all about health advocacy, all about, you know, knowing your body inside and out and knowing how to have those conversations with your doctors, because no one likes the doctor. No one wants to go have the tests done, but you have to for your own health. So there's that portion. Erica Weller was so influential in so many ways. I've mentioned her already, not only as my sponsor, but also just as another, you know, really powerful, really independent woman that I absolutely look up to. Even Arlene Violet, when I met her, I was actually starstruck because it was just so incredible to have this woman who paved the way for women in politics, women in law in this state of Rhode Island in front of me. And she actually gave me her book called Convictions, and she signed it for me. And it was just, and in that book, she said something interesting that stuck with me. And she said that someone had mentioned to her, oh, well, you know, why do you want to be in politics? Your women don't belong in politics. It's messy. It's not good. It's not clean. And I remember she wrote that she said, well, I think that's exactly why I should be in it. And I think being Women's History Month, that quotation stuck with me in so many ways because life is messy. Politics, messy. The world, you know, any field you go into is going to have its problems. It's going to have, you know, a caveat. But if someone like Arlene Violet can just flip a switch and really pave the way for other women, and she can say, no, I think that's why I need to be in here. It's messy, and that's why I have to be sitting at this table, at this boardroom, in this courtroom, on the Miss America stage, I think I can do that too. Definitely.
You alluded to your social impact initiative. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us how you chose yours?
Sure. So my social impact initiative is called Trust Your Gut, Be Your Own Health Advocate. And it's twofold. So it looks at health advocacy as a whole. But it focuses on encouraging patients to have those conversations with their doctors, especially high school and college students, because when you're in high school, you're going to college, that's kind of the first time you're away from home. Mom and dad aren't, you know, on your shoulder saying, hey, you know, have you gotten this checked? Have you taken your medication? Do you know what's going on? So you're away from home for the first time. And so it was my mission as Ms. Rowland to talk to high schoolers and say, listen, when you leave, this is what you need to know. Here's how to have conversations with your doctors. And let's talk about the disparities in healthcare and why is that a concern? The other side of it, too, was also educating future healthcare providers about how to have those conversations with their patients. And again, looking at healthcare disparities, who gets what care and why? So I don't pretend to be a doctor. I am not at all. The sight of blood makes me a little. But what I do know is there is much work to be done. And I know that future doctors, as long as they can have that open relationship and that open conversation with their patients, it's a two-way street. The doctor has to know the patient, but the patient also has to be open enough to say, this isn't getting better. So I created it because my mom had a gastrointestinal stromal tumor, say that five times fast, removed in 2019. And we're grateful that she is, you know, 3 years cancer-free and she's doing very well. But it was because she worked with her doctors and she said, no, this is not, I know that I don't feel well. And, you know, we're very grateful that she had that conversation. Her doctors were like, okay, if that's what you're feeling, then we need to observe further. We need to know what's going on. And so when it came to the social impact portion, I knew that that was something that I had to do, not only as Ms. Rowland, but also as her daughter. And it's been rewarding because during this year, I've spoken to high school students. I've spoken to students at Brown University about clinical trials. I worked with Brown University over the summer, right after I won, about antibiotic resistance and the antibiotic crisis. That was really, really great. And just to talk to people and have them say, listen, this didn't happen to me, but this happened to, you know, someone I know, someone in my family. You know, thank you for having this conversation. I know that this affects so many people, and that's a much bigger conversation. And if I can start having that openness with people and they can know that they have to go talk to their doctor because of whatever concern they may have, or they have to push a family member to go do that, then I know that I was at least successful a little bit. Like I did something helpful for somebody.
But it makes a lot of sense, but in order, like, encouraging people to advocate for themselves.
Yes, and exactly. And that's in and out of the doctor's office. That's, you know, wherever you are. But unfortunately, when you have those 15 minutes in the doctor's office, it is so easy to just gloss over things that you don't want to talk about. And that's where problems come about. Again, I'm not a doctor, but I do know that I partnered with a nonprofit down in D.C. called the National Patient Advocate Foundation. And they really focus on patient-centered care, and they do podcasts, they encourage people to know their bodies, talk to their doctors, and they point people to resources should they need them in the healthcare field. So again, it's knowing there are so many resources available should you need specific healthcare, should you have a question, but you don't know who to ask. There are resources, and it's not just limited to your one doctor. And again, your primary care should be someone that you trust completely.
Well, Abby, it's been so great talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Subscribe to the Subscribe to the Providence College Podcast in all the usual places, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, as well as your smart speaker. If you like what you hear, please review and share with others. Thanks for listening, and go Friars.